Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we have news on an important issue that Congress failed to address before adjourning. We'll also tell you about the latest major company to cut ties with the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. We have some sad news today on lives lost in two tragic accidents this weekend, including one that claimed the life of activist San Diego's former president and KNSJ's Talk of the Town host, Douglas Holbrook. In Green Scene, we'll have news about a controversial proposed plan to open up 22 million acres of California deserts to renewable energy development and about a lawsuit pending to protect local eagles. Plus, we'll have news about a high rate of flu deaths and why county officials are urging everyone to get a flu shot. On Bookshelf, Raina Menasche interviews author John Mixa and his doctor about his amazing recovery from total paralysis. And finally, for our newsmaker interviews today, Leon Thompson will be speaking with two candidates for the Santee City Council. So stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Congress has adjourned for 2 months, leaving plenty of unfinished business. Much to the dismay of local Iraqi Americans, one measure that ran out of time to be voted upon was a plan to help relocate tens of thousands of Iraqi minorities who have been forced to flee their homes by ISIL, the Islamic terrorists who seized control of much of Iraq and Syria. Congressman Juan Vargas, who sponsored the bill, said the measure had broad support and that he will work to win passage in the next session. But that's small comfort in San Diego's East County, where Chaldean leaders have spent months lobbying Congress and the administration to help save Iraq's persecuted Christians, Kurds, and other religious minorities whose lives remain in danger. Religious leaders, including Bishop Jamo and Iraqi-American leader Mark Arabo from San Diego, traveled to Washington in efforts to build support for the measure. They sought to raise the cap on the number of Iraqi refugees who can be admitted to the U.S., making the case for at least 70,000 people for whom they provided documentation. ISIL terrorists have forced Iraqi Christians, Yazidis, and other religious minorities to flee their homes with nothing but the clothes on their back, or face death by the sword if they refuse to convert to Islam. Some victims have been tortured, kidnapped, and sold into slavery, while others have been beheaded or killed in other brutal ways. Arabo told the UT San Diego, "My worst fear is we will look back 3 years from now and say we could have stopped the genocide." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with the Business Report from East County Magazine. A growing number of companies are heeding their customers' requests and ending their affiliation with the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC for short. ALEC works to get measures benefiting corporations enacted in legislatures across the nation. Here in California, ALEC is chaired by East County's State Senator Joel Anderson. The latest to dump ALEC is Google, for what Google's chairman Eric Schmidt calls ALEC's pattern of lying about climate change and ignoring science. Schmidt states the facts of climate change are not in question anymore. The people who oppose it are really hurting our children and our grandchildren and making the world a much worse place, Google's chairman adds. Other companies that have terminated their associates with ALEC include Microsoft, General Motors, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, and Bank of America. ALEC has also drawn ire from many Americans due to its union-busting and anti-civil rights stance, its denial of global warming, support of legislation favoring insurance companies over consumers, and its push for lax regulation on tobacco, among other issues. ALEC has also supported privatizing public education in prisons, the website ALEC Exposed reveals. ALEC is funded almost entirely by large corporations, including the oil industry, pharmaceutical and tobacco corporations, as well as the billionaire Koch brothers, who also funded the launch of the Tea Party movement. But now, through the power of the Internet and social media, ordinary citizens who lack the financial resources of powerful corporations are finding that there is power in organizing online, leveraging consumers' buying power to persuade corporations like Google and Microsoft to stop funding ALEC and protect the public interest over the interests of corporations.
This is Miriam Raftery with some tragic news regarding a fellow KNSJ radio host. Douglas Holbrook, a San Diego attorney, host of KNSJ's Talk of the Town show and past president of Activist San Diego, has died of injuries sustained in a tragic vehicle accident. Activist San Diego is the nonprofit organization that owns and operates KNSJ Radio. Holbrook was driving to his 92-year-old mother's birthday party, which he had organized over the weekend, when his SUV overturned and plunged down an embankment. He was transported to a hospital, where he later passed away. Holbrook co-hosted the Talk of the Town show on KNSJ along with former city attorney Mike Aguirre. He previously hosted Perspectives, a nationally syndicated radio program, and Legally Speaking, a legal advice show. His San Diego law practice specialized in criminal law and domestic violence cases. Holbrook was also a faculty member at San Diego State University and the University of San Diego, teaching political science and business law. In addition, he served on the San Diego Crime Commission and the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Task Force. Holbrook also had a passion for politics, running for San Diego City Council in 2005. He co-founded the Coalition of Independent Voters for an Informed Constituency, seeking to engage independent voters who had become apathetic and disenfranchised by major political parties. Holbrook organized a Comedy Writers of San Diego group and also wrote about the history of Golden Hill, where he lived in a historic home designed by Irving Gill. Martin Eder, the founder of Activist San Diego and KNSJ, issued this statement on Holbrook's death. "This sudden loss to his family, friends, and to our organization and radio station, which he loved and dedicated so much time to in the last year, is hard to comprehend," says Eder, who adds, "On behalf of the ASD board, we send our condolences to family, friends, and co-workers." And here at East County Magazine, our staff also joins in sending our sympathies to the family and others who are mourning the loss of Douglas Holbrook.
A 61-year-old man was crushed by a tractor on Sunday morning in Lakeside. The Lakeside resident had been working with another man to excavate a pipe on Wildcat Canyon Road near Moose Valley Road when the tractor turned and the heavy load caused it to tip. According to Sergeant David Hale with the Sheriff's Department, the victim placed himself between the tractor and the hillside in an effort to stop it from tipping over. He was trapped against a hillside when the tractor toppled, killing him immediately. The name of the victim has not yet been released, pending notification of family. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. A draft plan that would open up 22 million acres of California's desert to large-scale renewable energy development has been released by the Federal Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The draft Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan and its environmental impact statement are now available for public comment through January 9th. The plan would streamline permitting to make it easier to build large-scale wind, solar, and geothermal projects along with transmission lines in many areas while protecting other areas from development. It spans 7 counties and presents 6 alternative approaches for meeting renewable energy and conservation goals through 2040. The plan is drawing concerns from both environmentalists and industry representatives. Terry Wehner with the Desert Protective Council, which has previously sued in an effort to halt industrial solar on sensitive desert habitat, told East County Magazine that the plan, quote, "to carve up our California desert for industrial solar is misguided," unquote. The plan completely ignores rooftop solar and brownfield alternatives, she notes. The environmental leader called the plan wrong from the start, adding, "People who believe we can meet our renewable energy needs and conserve the desert simultaneously are just plain deluded." Basin and Range Watch states on its website that the plan acknowledges some of the focus areas for development would have unmitigatable impacts to scenic vistas near national parks and wilderness areas. Eileen Anderson with the Center for Biological Diversity issued a statement calling on the administration to give at least equal weight to providing new incentives for significantly increasing distributed solar power close to places where energy is used, including on rooftops, parking lots, and in community-oriented renewable energy projects to help phase out fossil fuels and rapidly reduce emissions. She calls distributed solar, quote, a win for climate change, clean energy, and our treasured desert, unquote. But Nancy Rader, executive director of the California Wind Energy Association, says the California Desert Plan would hinder the wind industry with alternatives that don't include wind development zones in Imperial and Riverside County. She notes that Governor Jerry Brown has emphasized the importance of addressing climate change in his address to the United Nations recently. And Rader asks why California is aiming to put its best carbon-free wind resources off limits, the Desert Sun reports. The draft plan can be accessed online at DRECP.org, that stands for Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan.org, along with an informational webinar and a list of public meetings planned in October and November, where public input will also be accepted.
Protect Our Communities, a local conservation group, and backcountry landowners in East County have filed a lawsuit in federal court against the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of the Interior. The lawsuit alleges that the federal government's decision to approve a lease for Phase 2 of the Tule Wind Project in McCain Valley violates federal environmental laws, threatens the lives of San Diego County's golden eagles and other migratory birds. The suit also provides evidence that the Interior Department and Bureau of Indian Affairs ignored expert guidance from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Kelly Fuller, executive director of the Protect Our Communities Foundation, says San Diego's majestic golden eagles are already in trouble, with their population predicted to drop by half to only 25 breeding pairs. The last thing San Diego's golden eagles need are whirling blades near their nests and where they are soaring with the wind. Fuller says the group filed suit because the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service repeatedly warned the Bureau of Indian Affairs that Phase 2 of the Tule Wind Project would kill eagles. But the Bureau of Indian Affairs scorned Fish and Wildlife's request to change turbine siting on the ridgeline or to move the project entirely, she added. Last month, the U.S. Bureau of Wildlife Service again recommended that the project be redesigned or moved to another location. When the Fish and Wildlife Service rejected developer Iberdrola's renewables application for a permit to kill eagles legally for up to 30 years at Phase 2 of the Tule Wind Project. In its rejection letter, Fish and Wildlife said the entire Tule Wind Project posed a high risk to eagles, with low potential to avoid or mitigate impacts. Further, the company's eagle mortality estimate doesn't accurately reflect risk to eagles. The suit contends that estimate was based on studies done by David Bittner, the discredited eagle expert convicted in federal court after he flaunted licensing requirements, operating for years without a license while on the payroll of energy companies, including Iberdrola. Bittner refused to turn over tracking data on eagles to federal wildlife officials and was found with four freezers full of dead birds, including eagles, kept in violation of federal law. The Fish and Wildlife Service asked Iberdrola to resubmit its application, this time including the entire project and more eagle data covering a larger area of the project footprint. Nika Knight, a local business owner, is also a plaintiff in the lawsuit. Seeing eagles and other wildlife is one of the reasons why Californians visit San Diego's mountains. Local businesses, the Cleveland National Forest, and other cherished public lands benefit from that wildlife tourism, she says, adding, "We need to protect wildlife in order to keep people coming to the mountains and spending their tourist dollars that sustain San Diego's public lands and mountain communities." Thus far, SDG&E has not announced a power purchase agreement with the Tule Wind, and interestingly, SDG&E became involved in litigation in Montana after SDG&E tried to cancel power purchase agreement for a wind project there, reportedly because SDG&E learned that the wind developer concealed information about the project's risk to eagles. Bill Powers, an engineer and energy expert who serves on Protect Our Community's board of directors, says the Thule Wind project just doesn't make sense. We don't have to choose between Eagles and renewable energy. There are better clean energy alternatives that are less hazardous to Eagles, such as rooftop solar and energy efficiency. The suit reveals dozens of documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act from federal agencies showing the project's high risk to Eagles, and what the suit contends is decision-making by the Bureau of Indian Affairs that is illegal regarding Eagles. Protect Our Communities is a nonprofit group with a mission to defend communities and nature in San Diego County, Imperial County, and northern Baja, Mexico from harmful energy projects and advance better energy solutions through advocacy and law. To view documents related to this lawsuit and get more information, you can visit the Protect Our Communities website at protectourcommunities.org. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report for East County Magazine on KNSJ. Last influenza season had the most deaths in San Diego since the county began tracking the disease. 70 people died due to complications from the flu, the highest number ever recorded by the County Health and Human Services Agency. Although the majority of individuals who die from influenza are adults with pre-existing medical conditions, their deaths serve as a strong reminder for people to get vaccinated every year. Influenza can be deadly, and the county is urging everyone aged 6 months and older to get a flu shot. It takes weeks for immunity to develop, so now is the time to get vaccinated before the flu starts to spread, according to the county health officials. Vaccination is especially important for people who are at high risk of developing serious complications from influenza. They include people with medical conditions, asthma, diabetes, and lung disease, even if your symptoms are under control, pregnant women, people 65 years and older, people who live with or care for others who are at higher risk. County Public Health Officer Wilma Wooten says getting a flu shot every year is important because the vaccine effectiveness declines over time. The best way to protect against the flu is to get vaccinated each year. The influenza vaccine is available throughout San Diego County at doctor's offices, retail pharmacies, and county public health centers for people with no medical insurance. You can also visit SDIZ.org or call 211 San Diego to find a list of county locations.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing John Mixa and Dr. Scott P. Leary, MD, co-authors of the new book, Lasting Impact, My Miraculous Recovery from Total Paralysis. In Lasting Impact, my guest, John Mixa, tells his own life story with contributions from Dr. Leary, who's a board-certified neurosurgeon here in San Diego. Welcome, John, and welcome, Dr. Leary. It's a pleasure having you both on our show.
Thank you, Raina. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, thank you, Raina.
John, let's start with your book, your story. You tell your intensely personal experience of a 2009 bike accident and a spinal cord injury that left you quadriplegic, and about your road to recovery. Let's go back to that difficult day 5 years ago. If you could tell us about the accident and how it unfolded for you.
We had just gotten back from Las Vegas with our daughter and son-in-law. And in spite of what they say in Las Vegas, what you eat in Vegas does not stay in Vegas. So I put on a couple of extra pounds. And at the time, living in Carlsbad, California, I was cycling about 250 miles a week.
Wow.
Yeah, so they were getting ready to go back on Friday, August 21. Actually, August 22. And on August 21, I decided, well, I'll get out there and I'll do a quick 22-mile ride. Well, I was about 8 miles away from meeting my wife, Sherry, for a cup of coffee when a car turned into my bike path and took me out, took the bike out from under me, and I went flying over the car and landed on my neck. And with minutes, I was paralyzed from the neck down.
Oh, terrible. So do you remember this? What do you remember?
I'm paralyzed.
Oh, what a terrible experience. Dr. Leary, could you explain to us in layman's terms the full extent of John's injury? And why his chances of recovery were said to be as low as 1%?
So many people, when they become paralyzed or quadriplegic, many people, when they become quadriplegic, have a massive fracture in their cervical spine, which basically cuts the spinal cord in half. John had some minor fractures, but those were not the main problem. He had ruptured, in the force of the impact when he landed and twisted his neck, he ruptured a disc, and a massive fragment of disc squirted out and pushed back into his spinal cord, basically smashing it like from a sausage down to a pancake, flattened like a pancake. And to get to the question about his chances for recovery, it really has to do with the severity of this paralysis. He had what we consider a complete spinal cord injury. And what that means is, below the level where the herniation was, he could not move a muscle, and he couldn't feel anything. He had absolutely no function. He couldn't even wiggle his toe. He couldn't feel you brush his kneecap, nothing. Furthermore, he went into a horrible condition called spinal shock. And what that means is his blood pressure crashed, and he couldn't maintain his blood pressure, not because of blood loss, but because the nervous control was lost by the spinal cord injury. When we see someone in this condition, it's irreversible. It's a permanent condition, even with surgery. You can't come back from this.
So do you usually perform surgery to treat the other health risks accompanying it, but you can't fix the spinal cord injury? Is that it?
That's correct. And again, many times it's from a fracture, and we have to stabilize the spine. And in those instances, we can stabilize the spine, but we can't repair the damage to the spinal cord. Now, John could be the luckiest man alive, because I felt like he had a glimmer of a tiny chance that he might get better to some degree if we went in right away and took that herniation off the spinal cord. So even though he was in spinal shock, needing medications to keep his blood pressure in a safe range, we rushed him into surgery, and I took the fragment out surgically off the spinal cord in just under 6 hours from the time of impact. So very quick, rapid surgical intervention. And in my wildest fantasies, I never thought he would make the recovery that he did. It was truly miraculous.
It really is an amazing story, because I'm looking at him and he looks quite intact, very healthy. And so what was the next month like? Did you go through multiple surgeries and rehabilitation, John?
Well, it really was a fascinating next 21 days. Just to fast forward quickly, 21 days from the accident, I walked out of a rehabilitation center with nothing more than a neck brace. No wheelchair, no walker, no cane.
Wow.
And no one knew if I would recover at all. In fact, before the surgery, Dr. Leary said to my wife, "You have to let me operate. Give me the permission. But even if I do, John has less than 1% chance that he might be able to move his shoulders." So I went into this surgery with my wife and I thinking, I'm going to be quadriplegic the rest of my life.
Sure.
And as it turns out, the next morning in SICU, those early morning hours, I'm in and out of consciousness. I'm coming out of the anesthesia, and the nurse is coming in doing his examination. Of course, I'm intubated, so I can't say anything.
Right.
So I'm acknowledging all night long as he's poking and prodding that I have no feeling. Well, then about 6:30 in the morning, I woke up and the nurse wasn't in the room. And I decided, well, I remembered I couldn't move my waist, so I tried lifting it up, and it moved. And so then I tried wiggling my fingers, and they moved. And so I could see my feet, and I tried rocking them and wiggling my toes, and it all worked. So I can't say anything. I'm intubated. So I scream out in my head,
right,
I am not paralyzed. Well, the nurse eventually found out when he came in and did his examination, calls up my wife at home, and she just breaks down in tears. The rest of it was just unbelievably fast slope up in terms of recovery through rehabilitation.
Right. So you went through some really dark moments and then an incredible, very bright moment that I'm okay.
Absolutely. And there were some setbacks along the way, too, in inpatient rehabilitation.
Sure.
I'm doing great. The next day, I'm probably going to get an order that says, John, you can walk anywhere you want in the rehabilitation center. And this was just 17 days after I was hit, and I can walk freely anywhere. But the night before, I went to bed real late, about 2 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and at 2:30, I actually woke up, and I was in a puddle of urine. And it was such an emotional setback. And they took me into the shower, and I literally broke down in the shower. And it was because, and I don't mean to be trite, but I was thinking of the lasting impact that this experience has had on me and my family. And I was worried that I thought I'd overcome the scare of being incontinent, but here I was with this major
sure.
setback. Well, as it turns out, I promised myself in that shower that night that I was going to make a bunch of lemonade out of this big fat lemon. And that's when I got the idea for the book.
Now, how did you keep up your morale, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, part of it is what I call the three healing powers. It, suffice it to say, I got hit in a place in San Diego County with maybe the world's best medical trauma system, and the care I got at Scripps was the best in the world. But in addition to that, for me, it was the power of my faith and prayer. It was the power of my human spirit. I thought I was going to die when I was on the road at the accident scene, and then something kicked in and said, I don't want to die. And then the third thing is the power of family and friends. Because you're just human. You're going to have times when you don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to go to the rehab. But when you have a wife giving you that metaphorical kick in the rear to go do it and keep pushing that wall forward, then you just do it. When I was in rehab, if they had me do 5 things, I said, I want to do 6. We want you to do 10 reps. I wanted to do 12. And I just wanted it so bad. I wanted my active lifestyle back. Nobody could tell me how far I would come because they hadn't seen this before.
Right.
So I said, fine. No one was on my team that wasn't 100% convinced that I was going to recover all the way. And we found a couple of people that got transferred to another case because they didn't buy into that.
Hmm.
So it really involved having a positive mental attitude.
That kind of leads me to my next question. Dr. Leary, you must see a lot of people with this kind of injury. So in your perspective, is there anything you'd like to see changed or added to people's treatment or in research? Or what would you like to see come to this field in treating people with John's condition? Even if they don't recover, what would you like to add to that? Is there anything?
One thing I'd like to emphasize, too, about John is we don't really use the term miracle lightly. I have never seen anyone recover from a complete injury to be completely normal, ever. I have a lot of colleagues and friends. I've never heard of another case like this. It's that extraordinary. As a neurosurgeon, I'm very fortunate. I get to help a lot of people. And in that process, we make a lasting impact on a lot of people's lives. But I've never been able to take someone from this devastating injury all the way back to normal. And so what I'd like to see is that there's, you know, maybe two things I'd like to see. One is an awareness that in certain instances, going in surgically makes sense in it as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
When we're very well trained as neurosurgeons that when you have bleeding in the brain, if it's surgical, you got to do it right away.
Right.
Similar to treating a heart attack. You got to treat that right away. Well, spinal cord trauma is no different. And if there are compression of the spinal cord, then I think early decompression, clearly in this case, is what made the difference. In patients who have a more devastating transection or cutting of the spinal cord, I think we just need more research into what we can do to regenerate those neural connections. And that's where you see research in stem cells
right.
and these areas being really explored. And I think that and maybe other technologies that we haven't invented yet is what's going to make a difference.
Yeah, it certainly gives you hope. And that leads to my last question for both of you. You know, as I listen to your story, it's really about courage and about hope. So what would you like to communicate, say right now, to our listeners out there, someone who might be battling paralysis, to keep going, even when the chances are so much against you?
Raina, I think what I would say is the way I sign every one of my books, and it's the saying that I have on my road ID on my wrist, and it may sound trite, but for me, and I think I hope for many other people, to learn that every day is a bonus day. And that lesson just hit home so deeply for me and resonates so deeply that I say it every day. I wake up and I go, I'm not paralyzed. I'm married to a beautiful, loving wife and partner. It's another bonus day for me.
Right. So focus on what you have and not the dire percentages.
Be very comfortable with what you have and where you are in life. Right. And realize that you can look left and right and see someone so worse off. When I went into rehab, the first time I was in inpatient rehab, I went down into the gym. And I'm thinking, pity party. I've got this spinal cord injury. I'm going to be the worst one there. I was the least of the damaged in the place. And I went, holy camoli, these people don't have legs, they don't have knees, they don't have brains anymore. So every day really is a bonus day for me. That's the message I want to leave.
Is there anything you'd like to add about that, Dr. Leary?
John's such an amazing individual, and I think what other patients can take from him is the inspiration to fight through adversity and to fight through what seem to be impossible odds and to never give up. And that's what he did, and his attitude really helped his recovery and sped it along.
Okay. Well, we're going to stop it there. Our time is up. But thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Raina. It's very nice to be here.
Thank you, Raina.
If you would like more information about my guests and about Lasting Impact, please visit John's website at www.johnmiksa.com, and that's spelled M-I-K-S-A. Dr. Scott, www.drscottleary.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show, and this week we're sitting down with candidates for some of our local races. We started by inviting the candidates for the Santee City Council race. There are five running. So far, two have accepted. So today, Leon Thompson is interviewing John Minto and Maggie Acera.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine on KNSJ, and today our special guest is John Minto. He is on the Santee City Council for 12 years and is running for re-election. Welcome to our studio.
Thanks for having me here, Leon.
So let's start out right from the top. Who are you and why are you running?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that this is a great opportunity. I appreciate you having me here. Most of the time when we go to print media, they give me 150 or 200 words to tell why I'm doing this. And really, it's not enough. The reason why I'm doing this is because I lived in Santee for a long time. I built my house there and moved my wife there. And we said, this would be a great place for an investment and place to live. And quite frankly, things weren't moving fast enough for me. And so I said one day to my wife, how about if I run for city council? She said, well, why not?
And that's really how you got started.
That's how I got started. So today I'm running for re-election, though. And there's a lot of controversy these days over people that have been in office for a long time. Now, 12 years, it sounds like a long time, but it's really not, because in government, as most people know, things move very slowly. I can tell you, though, that I spent 29 years on the San Diego Police Department. And in that work, I didn't have the luxury of taking a long time to make decisions and make things happen. So when I got on the council, I said, I'm going to make things happen. I'm going to make things move. And I did. And today, Santee is enjoying a robust economy because of that. And people say, what do you mean? Well, we went through what, the second greatest depression maybe in times.
Yes.
And the bottom line is if you work on the economy and create jobs and things of that nature, put people to work so they have a sustainable living wage, you know what? The economy isn't going to hurt you as bad as maybe places where they don't do that.
You know, I lived in Santee 12 years ago. I lived in Finita. Santee's a much different place now.
It sure is. I can tell you that today we have things that people really enjoy. One of the biggest things I've done so far is building a public-private partnership with the Sportsplex.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Sportsplex USA is the owner-operator of Sportsplex USA. However, the city of Santee owns that facility. It's a public park. But by entering into that public-private partnership, what we did is we put people to work. We took away all the need for the city to run everything that's going on there, putting together tournaments and things of that nature. And today, they generate over 30,000 hotel stays in our area just on tournaments alone. And that's almost a $2 million economy just at that Sportsplex. And that was a vision that I had. And you know what? I have more visions like that. And
well, tell us more.
Well, I can tell you that I've been very lucky. I've been able to do things like chair the Borders Committee for the San Diego Association of Governments. So I've learned about our tribal people. We've learned about our neighbors in Orange County, Riverside, and Imperial. And then even what's going on somewhat south of the border. And moving on, I got the opportunity also to be on the Metropolitan Transit System Board of Directors, working on public safety issues.
Absolutely.
So that means I hear from time to time about things happening on our trolley here between Santee and El Cajon, and I'm able to generate some interest by our public safety group in MTS to get out here and check on things. One of the other things that I think I have a lot of pride in is chairing the East County Economic Development Council.
Yes.
Now, why is that so important? The reason why it's important is because in my chairmanship, I've challenged my committees to come up with something that's going to create jobs and support education.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that we came up with is we have a local company here in Santee called Quality Manufacturing Incorporated, QCMI. And they stepped up big time. Bob Grande owns that company. His CEO is Rick Urban. And we've partnered with Grossmont College to create an academy so that people can learn about manufacturing and get to work. And we're targeting people from eighth grade high schoolers, or junior high schoolers, I guess they call them now, or middle schoolers, to people that are displaced by that Great Depression we talked about, especially our veterans. So they get to go to school, basically, but work also and learn a new trade, something that's going to create that sustainable wage that we talked about.
Now, where are they finding jobs after training?
Well, it's very new, so we haven't really been able to put a lot of people to work yet, but we had to start someplace.
Right.
We had our first academy in May, so that was just a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
And the first academy that went through were actually the people that already were working at QCMI.
I see.
And a great story is that you have to take an aptitude test in order to find out where you can be placed. And so when his staff took the aptitude test, was a janitor that actually scored the highest on that test. So they plucked this guy out of this job being a janitor and put him in this academy, and now he's learning to be a manufacturer. Wow. So what a great success story. And that's just one, and that's within their own company. Right. What happens when we start getting other people to come in, take that test, and then get placed for manufacturing? Right. And it doesn't matter where they go. They could go to QCMI, or they could go down to one of the other big manufacturers that we have in San Diego County.
Exactly.
These are some of the reasons why I'm running for city council again, because I have this great opportunity to do this. I have this vision, so to speak, where I see people working. I see people being entertained.
Right.
And to me, that's what a community is about.
Right. You mentioned entertainment on your website.
Yes.
Tell us about how your vision for entertainment.
Well, I got to tell you, we've been talking a long time about entertainment in Santee. And most people say, oh, the movie theater. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, we've had a lot of problems over the years because it's difficult for us to get the city of Santee, the county of San Diego, Ryan Corporation, a developer, and a movie outlet to work together. Uh-huh. Everybody has to be involved because the county of San Diego actually owns the land where this theater is going to go. Well, I'll tell you what, over the last 6 months, I've really been hitting my county board of supervisors that I know really hard. And I've expressed to them how important it is for us to get this deal done. And so about a month ago, one of their closed session meetings, they voted to sell a piece of property to the city of Santee.
For
$1.
Good deal.
For $1. And most people say, well, how can you do that? Well, what we did is we negotiated. We upzoned some of the property around it, and people will see that there are some apartments going in there.
Right.
High-end apartments, condominium style. And so what that does is balances out the land value so that they can give us that property for a dollar.
Nice.
Now, we're negotiating with Ryan and a theater chain now to come in there. But it's not going to be just a theater chain. There's going to be from 16 to 18 theaters. There's going to be a bowling alley.
Really?
There will be a laser tag group in there. And then there will be some other amenities in there, kind of like a Dave and Buster's. So this is
an entertainment complex.
There will be a bar and grill in there. That's what it is, a complete entertainment facility.
Right.
And I'm hoping that by maybe February or March, we'll be able to have an application in process to make that happen.
Wonderful. So tell me, what reason should we have for voting for you this time around? Let's hear your stump speech. Give us your best shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason why you should vote for me is because I'm your neighbor first, and I love working in the community. I volunteer to clean up the river. This year, in the beginning of the year, I did a project where we planted 2,000 trees. And so it's hard work, and I'm not afraid of hard work. Some of these things that we just talked about, those were hard work because it was difficult getting people to believe that that could happen. One of the important things to know about me is that as the chairman of the East County Economic Development Council, I look at things very regionally. So if I can get a business built in Santee or El Cajon or La Mesa, it means that there's going to be economy of scale to the entire region. People from Santee can get jobs. People from Santee can go and play, whatever it takes. So I like to look at things globally, and I'm going to do the best I can for the entire area. So having a strong, hardworking city councilman is the best way to keep this city moving forward and getting what people need. That's why people should vote for me.
We've been talking with John Minto, a 12-year veteran of the Santee City Council and running for re-election. Thank you so much for being with us, John.
I appreciate it. Thank you once again.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine, and today our special guest is Maggie Acero, who's running for Santee City Council. We're following this race very closely, and we're happy to have you here. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, why you're running?
Well, first of all, I'm a 25-year resident of Santee. I'm also a budget specialist with UC San Diego. I've been there for about 14 years now in the accounting and budget finance field. I'm running because it's been quite apparent. I ran 2 years ago because of this, that the City Hall, our elected representatives, are not focused on the people of Santee any longer. I'm not sure exactly why, what happened to kind of make them become insulated away from the public. My instincts tell me it started around when the shopping center was built, but it has become quite apparent looking around Santee, talking with people in Santee, that something's going on. A lot of people are asking, what is going on here? What's happening to this town? And I think it's time that we start looking at people that we can get into City Hall, be our representatives that come from more out in Santee's kind of private citizens. They're not part of the network there over at City Hall.
Yes, so what is happening in Santee with development?
Well, it seems that they're rezoning everything. They talk about open space, but it's become apparent when you go to City Hall and you see all the rezoning plans that open space means on hold until they get a developer that has a high enough bid. I have to say, I think the most surprising, shocking, and disheartening event that happened recently for the citizens in Santee was the rezoning of the Pinnacle Peak property. Uh-huh. I live in that neighborhood. We were not giving any real time to go in and talk about it or ask questions about it, talk about traffic, how it would impact our property values.
Right.
John Ryan, current city council member, who is not running again. He's one term. And his brother, Hal Ryan, who's a former five-term city council member in Santee, were trustees of the estate for over that property.
And, oh, they were?
Yes. And they were able to get the unanimous vote by the city council to rezone that property.
Really?
Very quickly. And with minimum input from the rest of us there in that surrounding neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We have rezoning at the last city council meeting. We have Rob McNellis, who is a sitting city council member, meeting with school board officials, with developers, and helping them come up with development plans for their land that they have in Santee.
Really?
And building housing units on one and businesses on another. That's the old Santee school.
Right.
That was torn down on Mission Gorge Road right as you get up to Magnolia Avenue.
Uh-huh.
There used to be a farmer's market there, and they moved it. Right. So we still have the two ball fields there.
Mm-hmm.
And what used to be an open field that we all used to be able to use and play, and the kids would ride their bikes on it, and people throw balls with the dogs, is now a chain link fence around something that is not used at all.
Really?
So what a city council member is doing, sitting down with developers and school board districts, you know, negotiating land deals and rezoning of their own property, I have no idea, but unless you realize that Ron McNellis is a real estate agent.
Right. So the city of Santee has done well as far as their budget is concerned, I understand. They've been able to balance budget. But my question is, what about the rest of Santee?
Right. The Santee citizens are basically piggy banks. Keep funding it. We keep buying. Keep giving us your sales taxes.
Uh-huh.
It's becoming quite apparent that they're squeezing us. And the traffic situation. They throw in more and more of these developments. They annex land from San Diego for 149 Castle Rock development. Mm-hmm. So that's going to dump on Mass Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
The Pinnacle Peaks property is going to be a townhome apartment complex unit. That's going to dump on Mission Gorge and Mass.
Right.
So if we can have banners up advertising this Santee car shows and bluegrass festivals and the Miss Santee pageant, I think we can put banners up advertising public meetings that have to do with the quality of life of the Santee resident and their property values.
You know, it sounds like you're going to be the voice of dissent over there at City Hall and be questioning some of the things that come up.
Yes.
Is that a fair characterization?
They probably, you know, 2 years ago when I ran against Jack Dale, we had a candidates forum at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And Randy Vopel was running for mayor against Rudy Reyes. He was the other candidate. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to keep my team together. We have a general plan that I found out at the last city council meeting supposedly overrides our votes at the ballot box. They
pod
have,
people.
Yes, the pod people. And you have a little community pod in the middle. This is what we're going to build, the little tiny narrow street. And then they said, don't worry, the boomers are seniors now. They don't need their cars. They can walk, ride their bikes. They don't need their cars. And then they showed a home like on any street in Santee, any uh-huh. street, and said, you don't need that much room. That's just wasted space.
Uh-huh.
And so what we have, what they voted in is not what they're only keeping Finita Ranch, the name, until uh-huh. they get in there. They right. even admitted that at the meeting.
No kidding.
And so 17% and high density pods, uh-huh. community pods, versus 56% move up housing on half acre lots
uh-huh.
for doctors and attorneys. And this is why. That is why they started calling us the La Jolla of East County. That this was a 180. This was totally not what the voters approved in this city.
Well, it sounds like what we need is more representation mm-hmm. for the citizens of mm-hmm. Santee, is what you're saying. And that
we need to bring them in. We need to bring them in. Did you ever go to a city council meeting?
It's
a half hour of, oh, here's a proclamation.
Right.
They're so great. They picked up trash in the riverbend. Okay, right. time for the city council meeting. Boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Okay, we have time for one speaker. Boom. Okay, we're out of here.
Right.
You know, and that is not how yes. our local government is supposed to work. You're supposed to stay there
right.
for as long as the people need to stay there and talk to you.
Uh-huh.
We have a city manager, city council form of government. Mm-hmm. Very few people know that Keith Till was fired.
Mm.
And we have Pedro de Orso as the interim city manager, who will probably become the new city manager.
So what are your plans to make Santee more transparent?
Number one is to start recording, video recording the city council meetings like everybody else does.
Really?
The county does, school
then
board.
Then play it on the city site?
Yeah, it's... when you're reading just the minutes,
uh-huh.
the tone
right.
of the meeting,
right.
the feelings of the people at the podium
sure.
speaking, their passion for whatever the subject is.
Mm-hmm.
With the video, while you weren't there, you can at least know what it was like at that moment during that situation during the city council meeting.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your vision for the city?
My vision is to make sure that we do not continue on this path that the team at uh-huh. City Hall has us on.
Right.
They are very proud of their account. They like what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're very defensive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep telling the citizens who are saying, what's going on here? What are you doing? Otherwise, you're going to have this high-density housing in pods,
mm-hmm.
pod people,
mm-hmm.
and the City Hall and Sandag are going to be making decisions on 83% of 2,600 acres. And believe me, they're not going to ask you what you want to do with it. You already were asked. Okay, you told them what you want. They're not going to do that. So now's the time to put your foot down, put a stop to it. The vision is to start bringing the focus back, the priority back to the people.
Right.
Bringing them back to City Hall, video recording, letting them get comfortable with the environment, coming in with a problem.
Uh-huh.
Go to the business owners, not because you have to, because it's election time, but just to see how they're doing
uh-huh.
outside of the shopping center, town hall, you know, center.
Uh-huh.
I believe that the video recordings would also be a good benefit to our high school government students, our junior high school students,
sure.
to see what local government, and they have a history now.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to come back to Santee and raise their children. There's this history there for them.
Right. Well, you have a passion for that, for democracy, I guess, for lack of a better term, people actually running the city.
You know, in the local level, it's nuts and bolts. People aren't interested in who gets the sprinkler contract.
Right.
Or who's going to trim the trees along Mission Gorge Road.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's your job. You're applying for it. You know what it's about. That's your job.
Right.
But when it comes to their quality of life,
mm-hmm.
they want to know. It's in their best interest to protect the city for their future. They would like for the city to be as good a home to their children or grandchildren as it was to them or
right.
their parents.
Uh-huh. So another issue that comes up when talking to all the candidates in Santee is the homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as a solution to visible homelessness in Santee?
Oh, well, you can't ignore it. Every community has homeless people. The reason the homeless are there, I can honestly, I've been there for 25 years. Do you know why? Mm. Because they stayed out of the way and no one bothered them. Mm-hmm. But we have an obligation to find them shelter and food. And not leave them to a lot of these people have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And it's not good for the community or for them. Mm-hmm. This health and safety of both parties is at stake in their path, but actually be a partner with them.
Right.
These people's their lives are in peril.
Right.
On these streets.
So what else would you like to say about your candidacy in this race and yourself?
I hear the citizens of Santee. I talked to them 2 years ago when I ran. I hear it even more now. What is happening? What is going on in this city? I hear you. I think the same thing. And that's why I'm running for city council. I want to go in there and find out what is happening with this city. I want to bring the people in and let them know what is happening with this city. How do you like that? Are we going in the right direction, the wrong direction? The people own the government, the local government. And my vision is to bring as many people in. You know, I see instead of the same get along, oh, aren't we a happy team type of city council meeting, I see people on one side saying, no, this is the way it should be. And this people over here saying, no, this is the way it should be. I see lots of voices and lots of disagreements until we come to an agreement. Uh-huh. And that's how it's supposed to work. I look forward to going out. Maybe sitting at Penguins having yogurt or seeing some of the business owners during the next 4 years and finding out what we can do better, letting them know what's coming up. Mm-hmm. So that they can come in. I'm hoping my first thing I can do is get those city council meetings on video and get those mm-hmm. on the website. Mm-hmm. That is the first step to drawing in more participation by the people and welcoming. I want them to know they're welcome mm-hmm. there at City Hall. So that is my vision, is just to stop this now before it goes any further and bring it back to where it belonged the whole time, back to the citizens of Santee.
Today it's been our honor to have Maggie Acera here, Santee City Council. Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming in and
hearing
all about
your candidacy.
Thank
you for asking me. It was great being here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.